Attention, attention all personnel. It's MASHcast.
Hello, and welcome to MASHcast, the show that celebrates, one episode at a time, the greatest TV series of all time, MASH, which ran on CBS from 1972 to 1983. Proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network, I'm your host, Corporal Captain Rob Kelly, and joining us again in the VIP tent is Major Max Romero. Max, welcome back again this season.
We're going home, Rob. The war is over.
It's awesome. This is it. MASH is over. I've done it. I've completed MASH. I've done all 23 episodes, and we're done. Now I can finally work on that Omega Men podcast I've had my own.
Amazing work, Rob.
Yeah, thank you. Yes. Yeah, it was really smart of me just to pick a show that only has 23 episodes. Ryan's the dummy. He's doing all 11 seasons of Cheers. I mean, I'm just doing these 23. Of course, Max and I are having a little bit of comedy there in the beginning. This is season one, episode 23, Ceasefire, which, of course, as you will probably not be surprised at, is not binding. It originally aired March 18th, 1973. It's written by Robert Klein and directed by Earl Bellamy. Now, of course, since Max has been on the show before, we already know his origin with the show, so we're going to get right into the plot of this one. After a particularly grueling, casualty-heavy period, the 477 gets an amazing bit of news from General Clayton. A ceasefire has been arranged. Even though Henry asks Hawkeye and Trapper not to say anything before it becomes official, the word gets out anyway, thanks to radar, and soon the camp breaks into a nonstop party. The only holdout is Trapper, who doesn't believe it's really true. Hawkeye is aghast at Trapper's pessimism and bets him $50 that he's wrong. Radar starts a scrapbook and gets people to sign it. Frank and Hylip spend their remaining time together, and Hawkeye has to extricate himself from the various relationships he has with some of the nurses. Nurse Cutler expects their relationship to continue once they get home, and Hawkeye lies, claiming to be married to get out of it. Nurse Cutler is not amused. General Klein arrives for one final send-off, and Hawkeye can't resist getting in one last dig. Under the guise of it being a tribute, he hears a slideshow of Clayton in various embarrassing scenarios, like coming out of Hot Lips' tent and holding her in a passionate embrace. Frank and Clayton are furious, Hot Lips embarrassed, and everyone else laughs. Unfortunately, word comes that the ceasefire is not happening, and wounded arrive shortly thereafter. In the end, Hawkeye is still upbeat, even though he threw away thousands of dollars in poker IOUs, severed his relationships with three nurses, and has Clayton mad at him. It was all worth it just to have that brief moment of hope. Max, what do you think about ceasefire?
Oof, it is a heartbreaker. It's kind of a tough episode because, as you said, everyone, as the rumor spreads that there's going to be a ceasefire, everyone is so happy, especially Hawkeye, are just so overjoyed by the idea that they're going to get to go home, that the war is over. That this madness of running a MASH unit is going to be done. And, you know, Trapper is that lone voice saying, well, not so fast. And, of course, he turns out to be right. And it's you can see it's a slow motion accident about to happen. And you can just see how it's going to end. And it's hard to see how things are ending. You know, how things would end if the war was actually going to be over by that point. You know, you mentioned the scrapbook with Ruth Radar and Hawkeye's relationships and, you know, all these things. They they start giving stuff away to the Koreans in the unit. So everything is, including the loudspeakers, are disappearing. And, but you know, it's not going to last. You know that this happiness, this joy that they're feeling isn't going to last. And that's a tough thing for this episode to do.
Yeah, I love the angle that Trapper doesn't believe it. I think that adds a really great bit of tension. I love this episode. I think this is kind of like what we talked about just two episodes ago with Sticky Wicket. Ceasefire is not one that ever comes up on anybody's like greatest list of MASH episodes. And like when MeTV does like those marathons, Ceasefire is not one you hear talked about a lot. But I love this episode for multiple reasons. And the number one thing I think about is this episode was directed by, as I mentioned, Earl Bellamy. Now, Earl Bellamy only directed one other episode, Love Story. And I mentioned during Love Story, there's an interesting shot in that episode where Hawkeye and Trapper are trying to console Radar after he has been dumped by his erstwhile fiance. And Earl Bellamy puts the camera high up, like in the metaphorical rafters of the swamp. And so it's in a very unusual shot to see the characters from, like, basically the top of their heads. Now, I like that shot simply because it's unusual. It doesn't necessarily inform the scene in any real way. It's just kind of fancy. But nevertheless, as we all know, up until fairly recently, TV was a writer's medium, not so much a director's medium. You know, if you're directing a television show, you really are kind of you're submitting yourself to a system, that a train that's already moving. You know, and you just have to hop on and hopefully get it competently shot and get it out on time, stay on budget and whatever. Nowadays, they on some shows like Game of Thrones and Breaking Bad, they make a little bigger deal about the directors, but in the '70s, certainly not. But in this episode, Earl Bellamy does two moments that I think are really beautiful little moments. And they are so – MASH is so rare for having them that I appreciate. One is the scene where Hawkeye and Trapper are talking about the bet. And Trapper is sitting on his bunk and Hawkeye is, you know, just horrified. He's like, how can you think this is not going to happen? Like, what's the matter with you? And – he says, you know, I'll bet you $50. And right at that moment, Ho-John starts to come in. We see Ho-John, who is making his last appearance on the show, Patrick Adiarte playing Ho-John, who we thought went home to Maine, but apparently not. but as we see him come in, Hawkeye says, I hate to take your money. And Wayne Rogers says very quietly, I only hope you will. And as he says it, the camera pans from right to left, never showing us Trapper's face. And I think it's a beautiful shot because it first of all, I get just the fact that it's the camera's moving while the dialogue is being spoken. That's still even relatively unusual for MASH. But just there's something about the way that shot is composed and the way that it's really so quiet that Wayne Rogers just says it. I only hope you will. It's just – it's like a deadly serious moment in a very funny scene. And I love the way Earl Bellamy constructed it. I think it's great. And I almost feel like no one ever other noticed it. And then the other detail is when Hawkeye and Nurse Cutler have their moment behind the curtain in the post-op. And he has to reveal to her that you know, his fake wife and kids. And we see their silhouettes. And we see Nurse Cutler grab a bedpan and bonk Hawkeye over the head with it. And right at the moment that his head gets hit with the bedpan, Earl Bellamy cuts to somebody outside with one of those, like, those party favors that it. And so he goes from the sound cut, goes from the bonk of the bedpan to the the thing. And it's a great sound cut. And I'm like, man, this guy is really putting some nice effects into this episode. Like, girl, good on you, Earl Bellamy. I don't know if anybody ever noticed. And the poor guy never really got to do much else that was like one of his credits post MASH is the Castaways on Gilligan's Island. I don't think there's probably a lot of opportunity there for fancy shots. But I was like, this guy was really talented and he brought a lot of visual life to this episode. I'm really impressed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, and it's true. And especially since there's so much going on in almost every scene. You know, there are people almost everywhere in most of the scenes. So to have those little moments that pop out like that is really kind of, you know, really kind of amazing.
Yeah. I mean, I said that probably took extra time to sit there and put that in there. And I love that. I love that he does it. This episode gets rid of a bunch of side characters. As I mentioned, Margie Cutler, played by Marcia Strassman. This is her final appearance. We have Barbara Bannerman, another one of Hawkeye's paramours. This is her last appearance. And he's going to mention Ho-John's last appearance. The other nurse that Hawkeye dumps here, she's played by Lynette Meddy. And here she plays Lieutenant Griffin. She would come back in multiple episodes, each time playing a different nurse. She played Nurse Abel and she played Nurse Baker. Right. And they just kept using the same actress. I don't know why they figured nobody was paying attention. But but this was MASH's, you know, Marcia Strassman's character never made a whole lot of sense because they needed Hawkeye to be constantly single. And she disappeared for most of the season, but they brought her back here just to basically get rid of her. So this is her final appearance.
Right. And what a jerk is Hawkeye, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he's just – obviously he's been – because you kind of wonder, oh, how does Hawkeye pull all these women all the time? Especially in you know, there's not, you know, it's a limited pool, right?
Right.
That's got to be pretty loosey-goosey if that's going on. But obviously, he's been telling all of them, oh, once the war is over, we're going to be together. And we're going to, he's implying that they're going to get married. And once he actually has to pay that bill, he bolts. And he tells this awful lie of having a wife and, what, 5 kids?
Yeah.
You know, it's terrible. It's just terrible. But, you know, you mentioned also that that scene with Trapper, with Wayne Rogers. And an interesting choice that they made, and I don't know if it was the script or if it was the director, but they, for the most part in that episode, Trapper is pretty quiet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could say that he is kind of like a fulcrum for the episode because, you know, like you said, he's the lone standout. But he also, you know, he's always kind of in the background, but he's just kind of like clumping around with his hands in his pockets, mm-hmm. and has kind of this wry look on his face, like he knows it's all just going to fall apart. And I think that's an interesting choice for someone, because he's not going around telling everybody, no, no, everyone calm down. It's probably not
right.
going to happen.
Yeah.
He just lets it go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we see him follow when there's the scene of everybody in the center of the camp and they're in the Jeep and they're throwing the streamers and everybody. Mm-hmm. And he's just walking like 5 paces behind, just looking kind of sour.
Right.
So yeah, because he just doesn't believe it. I said it became pretty clear early on that Alan Alda was the driving creative force of the show, of course, outside of Larry Gelbart and Gene Reynolds and stuff. But Alda just grabbed this part and ran with it and, you know, started becoming – he had already directed an episode and written one by this point. And Wayne Rogers was starting to get shuffled off to the side. And so mm-hmm. it's nice to see him be the holdout. I like that. I like that they do that. And it gives Wayne Rogers something else to do. And like you mentioned, Wayne Rogers was great in this part, you know? I mean, he didn't get as much to do as he should have, but when they let him sort of take center stage, he did it really well. Like you said, I like that he's not trying to run in everybody's parade. It's just that there is the one moment where he signs Raiders' scrapbook, compliments of a friend. Yeah.
I'm just going to start signing everything that way now.
Yeah, yeah, right. Just sign everything. Compliments of a friend. You really know how to reach a guy. I love all that.
Poor Radar. Yeah, no, but it's really it's interesting, and it makes me wonder about the character of Trapper. You know, what was his experience in the past? What is it about Trapper that makes him so cynical about the whole thing?
Yeah.
You know, what is it that keeps him from celebrating along with everyone else?
Right. I mean, again, you have to figure. I mean, we know, of course, as audience members, this the show was the first season. They're not ending the show, so we know how it's going to end. But we do kind of wonder how they're going to get there. And I guess we'll just jump to it now. That is the one moment of this episode that I think is a little on the cheap side. Is that when they're having the big party with Clayton and everybody else, and Hawkeye gives away his poker winnings. By the way, I can never resist talking about the inflation rates, because Hawkeye throws away $1,500 worth of poker winnings, which would be the equivalent of $15,000 now.
Wow.
So that was a pretty big sacrifice on Hawkeye's part. Give away that kind of dough, man. I mean, as you said in the Sticky Wicked episode, $15,000 would be a lot now.
I'd be happy. I'm not going to give that up.
No, that's crazy. But when they're watching the footage of Clayton, and Clayton is basically saying, you know, you damn you, Pierce. And then you hear the voiceover, there is no ceasefire, and there's wounded. And you're like, the wounded wouldn't be arriving that fast. You would get word of it. Wars don't work that way. It's not like it's a bunch of people that are just standing around, and the minute the ceasefire is pulled, they just start fighting. It's like, no, there's actual battles that are scheduled and things like that. That's the only cheap part. And I'm figuring that's just because they've got 23 minutes. You know, they just don't have the time to put enough space between – you know, this moment of levity in the mess tent, and then that moment. That's the only cheap part at all, but it's pretty minor in what I think is a really solid episode.
Yeah, I think personally I would have ended the episode maybe by just saying the ceasefire isn't happening.
Mm.
And maybe just have everyone who's celebrating in the tent become quiet and end on that moment. Because I agree, I don't think it needed to have the whole, you know, wounded are here and everyone has to scatter from the tent. You know, I think they could have just stayed on that moment for a little bit longer.
Yeah, I agree with that. I don't know about you, but like the slides that we have that we see of Clayton and Hot Lips in the various moments of embrace, there's something about the way they're staged. They look like ViewMaster slides because they were all shot clearly on a set. They weren't shot outside. So they have this kind of fake stage look. And I'm like, this really does look like a ViewMaster reel that you got of Clayton and Hot Lips. There's just something so phony about them that I find them very charming.
Well, and they're also obviously shot with a flash. And you would think that they know that someone took those pictures.
Yeah, right. Yeah. They're sitting in a Jeep canoodling. How do they not know there's someone under the camera right there? I mean, what did they
do? And in those days, you know, there were those big bulb flashes. Yeah. You know? So those.
It makes no sense at all. It's very funny, though, but it makes not a lick of sense. I also noticed in that scene, though, when they're in the mess tent, and I think it's Henry is talking, and we see Hawkeye, and he's got a beer in his hand. He's got that can of Star beer.
Yeah.
He pours it on Trapper's head. He just pours, and I think it's an ad lib because Wayne Rogers looks genuinely surprised, and he looks at Alan Alda and just starts to giggle, and then they move on. I'm like, that's just Alda and Wayne Rogers just goofing around.
Yeah. One of my favorite parts of this episode actually also is Frank and Margaret saying goodbye, because it starts out, the running joke is Margaret just keeps saying, I'm not going to be any trouble, Frank. I'm not going to be any trouble, Frank. And she keeps saying this to him. And not a letter, not a phone call, nothing. You don't have to worry about me, Frank. But as the day goes on, they get drunker and drunker. and by the end, Margaret is saying, you won't have any trouble from me, Frank. But I can go and I can be your nurse, Frank. I can be your nurse. And he goes, my wife is my nurse. Then I'll be your patient. And Margaret tries to put her head in a coal oven so she can kill herself. And it's sad, obviously, but it the continual breakdown throughout the day and as they just get drunker is pretty funny.
Oh, any episode that gives Loretta Swit the chance to be drunk, I think it's a great episode. Because Loretta Swit did a great pickled voice. She gets like this kind of like, oh, no, nothing, Frank. Everything's fine, Frank. There's just something so – I just laugh at it every time. There's just something – I don't know why she would talk like that when you're drunk. But when in season three when they do the Alcoholics Unanimous episode, that one – she does another one. No, sir, loot, no, nothing. I love the way Loretta Swit does her drunk voice. It's fantastic.
I also like a bit of Margaret characterization is that they're also singing Happy Days Are Here Again. No, Auld Lang Syne. Auld Lang Syne. And you can clearly hear Margaret's voice because she cannot sing.
Right.
And that is something that's carried on every time Loretta Swit sings on that on MASH. She's awful. you can always hear her off pitch, you know, in this crowd of people singing. Yeah, I love that.
Right. And the other episode where she sings My Blue Heaven, she's pretty bad. She's like, My Blue Heaven. Yeah, she's not a great singer. It's very, very funny. I noticed, too, when there's the scene where everybody is celebrating, this nurse that we've never seen before runs by and picks up Radar and lifts him up off his feet and twirls him around and puts him back down. And it's like, again, that feels like an ad lib because it just looks so – he looks so startled. I mean, it may just be Gary Berghoff just doing a good job. But I like that little detail of like this actress who we've never seen before is so enraptured. She picks up Radar and throws him around like a teddy bear. I just love that. Fantastic. This episode features the debut of Dennis Troy. And Dennis Troy was an actor. He basically has he did 23 episodes of MASH, and he was one of those guys who was always in the background. He's always a corpsman. He plays a wounded guy, but most of the time he's a corpsman. And in later seasons, he would sort of be consistently playing just a member of the unit. You know, he was somebody that was bringing stretchers in, and he actually gets a line in the very final episode where they're all in the mess tent saying what they're going to do in the future. He's the one, he says, I don't know what. No, that's where we're going. He talks about that he's going to go work at on a ranch, I think. But I mean, that's the beginning. And it's funny because it's like, this guy is on IMDb. He has like 25 credits, like two credits that are not MASH and 23 MASHes. So I don't know what, like, I'm sort of fascinated. Like, could you live off that? Like, did you, like, being in a MASH every fourth week, was that enough to, like, pay the bills? I have no idea how it works.
I wonder if you can live off the residuals.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. Does that work? What kind of deal does Dennis Troy get? Bruce Kimmel, the actor, he plays Private Gilbert. He's one of the few wounded that we see. He has credits from The Partridge Family, Happy Days, and something called The Ghastly Love of Johnny X, which I have no idea what that is, but it sounds really cool. There's another great moment where Hawkeye is in the mess tent with Lynette Meddy, Nurse Griffin, and he's put the moves on her, and she says something about somebody might walk in, and that line only really would work. That line would work if the flaps of the tent weren't up, but they are.
Right.
So Everybody can see everything anyway. So what is she worried about? I don't understand.
Yeah. It's interesting. It's just, and you see it in MASH, and I do not have a military background, so I don't know. But it always makes me wonder if there's this idea of privacy. You know, like if you go behind a wall or you go behind a screen, people just kind of choose to ignore you, and you feel like you have some privacy. I'm not sure.
Yeah, it's very, very odd. It's like you have to figure that there's a certain amount of just everybody's kind of knowing what's going on sort of thing. I mean, I don't know. Yeah. Like what did Trapper – like when Hawkeye or Trapper had a nurse over, what did they do? Could you keep Frank out of your tent if you had a nurse in your cot with you? Could you – like I would think Frank would just come in. I don't know. I don't know the mechanics of working in a unit like that. It seemed good. I guess privacy is like the first thing that goes out the door, I guess, if you're at a MASH unit, I would imagine.
Yeah.
Hawkeye does mention how it gets very cold up in Vermont, which is, you know, meant to be Maine, of course. Did you notice in the scene with Henry where he's talking about shaving and he says, I'm going to be impossible with my wife again. He has two like bucket seats in his tent. They look like they're from like a bus or a plane. I'm like, where do those seats come from? What are those things?
I don't know. Maybe they're from a Jeep, maybe. I mean, like, you said, maybe they're from a Jeep.
I don't know. It's like a weird detail that he just has these two bucket seats that are in his tent. Oh, and speaking of seats, I love the moment. It's not my favorite joke line, but it's one of my favorites where in Henry's office where he gets handed the phone by Radar and he says, oh, it's General Clayton. And of course he stands up just out of habit. And then General Clayton says, are you sitting? No, sir, maybe you should. And then he sits down and then he stands up again. And Hawkeye says something like, what are you doing, calisthenics over the phone?
You know, you mentioned that scene where he's shaving also. He's talking to Radar while that's going on. And Radar asks him about his autograph book, his scrapbook. And it's kind of a nice scene that kind of – it doesn't quite slip by, but it's obviously not a major part of the story or anything. But that's – they kind of – not kind of, they do. They admit how they feel about each other.
Because
at the same time, Henry tells Radar that he always looked at him kind of like a son. And Radar says, I almost feel like you were almost like a father. You know, and it's a nice little – and it kind of – as they're talking over each other, it kind of it takes away the mawkishness of it. And of course, Henry starts to huff and puff after that. But it's a nice little moment for the two characters.
Yeah. Yeah. They get to, you know, say to each other how they feel, which is terrific. I mean, they never full out say in the first season that Radar's father is not alive. They establish that later on. They would say that he had a heart attack and died early on, but they never expressly say it in the first season. But you figure that that's what's going on because Henry is so clearly his father figure, and it's a nice detail. Again, it's something that these little notes that McLean Stevenson, Gary Berghoff get to play, and it's really very sweet. I said I think this is just a terrific episode. I mentioned it was written by Lawrence Marks, who did a bunch of episodes, a bunch of great ones. It was also written by Robert Klein, who only did a few others. Robert Klein's one of his last credits is Weekend at Bernie's 2. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, sometimes Hollywood can be pretty rough. But I mean, he does a good job here. I mean, I think this is a really, really, it's a really sweet episode, a really interesting one. The idea that the war that this thing could be dangled in front of you, and then taken away at any moment is pretty brutal. You know, when you think about it, like that's you're so dying to go home and to hear that there might be a ceasefire, and then they're like, no, there's not going to be. It's like you just the particular terror or torture of that is I think well observed, and they really don't play that card ever again. Really, once in a while you'll hear, oh, there's news stories that there might be some peace talks going on, but never, but they never really go to this well again. This is the only time they ever do it.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because when they do talk about that sort of thing in future episodes, no one believes it.
Right.
Everyone has become Trapper at that point.
Yeah. <That's true. laughs> Aren't we all Trapper, really?
Aren't we all Trapper at this point?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like kind of like what we were saying is that I think a lot of things are being established in this first season, and things again to hindsight, you know, you can kind of pick up on these things as they're developing.
Yeah, so it's funny that they did one more show after this, because this kind of feels like a perfect season ender, really.
Yeah.
It's kind of strange that they do one more, but they did. But this feels like it would be a perfect way to end the season and go out on. But like I said, I think it's a really solid episode. So do you have a particular favorite line or favorite joke?
You know what? I do. And it's such a little throwaway line, and you don't even see the person saying it. Okay, so the person who gives the announcements – and I don't. They've never given him a name or anything, right? He's just the voice.
It's one of the more meta weird parts of MASH, yeah. Is that there's this announcer throughout all 3 years at the unit, and we never see him or never know his name.
Yeah, so he's making the announcement, and he's saying the ceasefire is just a rumor. Everyone has orders to go back to their regular duties, and he's basically saying, you know, stop screwing around and get back to work. But then he kind of says offhandedly to someone that obviously we can't see also, he goes, oh, honey, mine was the scotch and water.
Right.
You know? And I just came out of nowhere, and it cracked me up when I heard it.
It is good. I'm a big proponent of jokes that you hear but don't see. Mm-hmm. I always find this very funny to me. And so, yeah, I did like that gag, is that he's having a party. Because he's, like, clearly reading, like, a memo that he's been handed. Because it's like, you know, all property belongs to the U.S. Army and all this stuff. Like, oh, no, honey, mine was the gin and tonic. I thought that was that is a good gag. My favorite line, like I mentioned already, kind of is the moment with Trapper, because I just think it's so well done. But my favorite gag line is when Frank and Hot Lips are talking about their plans, presumably, you know, obviously Frank's plans don't involve Margaret, and Margaret doesn't know that. And when she sort of admits, don't worry, I won't get in the way, I won't be. And Frank says, gee, Margaret, it's swell of you to be so brave. Brave of you to be so swell. They gave Frank Burns so many of these nonsense phrases because he was such a weasel. And later on, he has a whole, in another later episode, where she worries about that she's fat. And she's like, am I fat? And he goes, no, you're not fat. You're not fat. You're more thin fat, the thin side of fat. It's just gibberish. And I love it. I love Larry Linville was able to sell those so well, because it's a guy who is so used to being a bullshit artist that he almost doesn't know what he's saying half the time. And I just love, swell of you to be so brave, brave of you to be so swell. It's like Orwellian non-speak. It's just nonsense. I just love it.
Well,
it makes me laugh.
And part of what's great about it is that it works.
And it works,
you know,
on her.
Margaret eats it up.
Yeah, it works on her. I mean, you can't blame Frank. It works.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, come on. If people are willing to, as we all know, if you're someone in a position of power and you're willing to lie your head off and people buy it, you can't blame you for trying.
Can't blame
it.
Them.
It's working. Seems to work pretty well for some very high powerful people. So, you know, I don't know. But anyway, yeah, that is Ceasefire. I think this is just a terrific episode. It features some really nice camera work by Earl Bellamy. There's another camera move between Hawkeye and Barbara Bannerman, where the camera it starts out further back and then pans between the two of them, and we see them on either side of the frame. So Earl Bellamy had some real directorial chops. I can't say that I'm so curious that I'm going to try and find other TV episodes that he directed to see if he did this for other shows, because I'm betting he didn't. But I am impressed. Like I said, this MASH is not known for directorial flourishes, but there's a couple of really nice moves here. And so all credit in the world to Earl Bellamy and to the writers, because I think this is just a really, really good episode. So, Max, thank you once again, man, for coming on. This is just so much fun.
Oh, thank you. I have so much fun coming on this show. So thanks for having me.
Yeah, I never get tired of talking about MASH. And so this has just been terrific. So where can people find you on our network?
People can find me at PlasticCast, which is my Plastic Man podcast here on the network. And also at The Mirror Factory, which is also here on the network. And you can find me on Twitter at The Mirror Factory, and it's Plastic Man.
Sounds good. I will venture a guess that no one will ever come onto the Mirror Factory saying they want to read a passage from the MASH book. I'm calling the shot.
I saw one in a used bookstore not too long ago, and I thought, I wonder if Rob would like this.
Oh, they are grim going. Oh boy. So, yeah. Oh, boy. So anyway, of course, if you want to listen to back episodes of the show, you can go to our website, fireandwaterpodcast.com. The show also has feeds from iTunes and Stitcher. You can subscribe there. And we're always talking about MASH over on Twitter, which is at MASH4077CAST. So thanks, everybody, for listening. And until next week, that is all.
With all my cynical heart.
I bet you it is. I bet you anything you want. I'll bet you $50 they're not playing around.
You got a bet.
I hate to take your money.
I only hope you will.